The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty!
It's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty!
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor,
and your drinking JC.
All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty!
It's time to get this party started tonight!
Footy Prime presents Today in Footy History on this day, December 17th. 1978, Canada wins silver medal at the 1978 CONCACAF Youth Tournament, falling 1-0 in extra time to Mexico. 2017, Brazilian footballer Kaká calls it a day. And 1989, December 17th, The Simpsons premieres as its very first episode, which did not solely focus on football, but did focus heavily on dog racing, which can be argued is also a sport. That is today, December 17th, in footy history.
There's some good ones, JC.
I like that.
Yeah, 78. Craig, you were part of that, right? The silver medal?
78, yeah, sure. I was 11.
Well, you were a very tall 11.
I was chubby.
You were not.
No. Judo, Craig.
I was chubby when I was 11, 12. Yeah.
I need to see photos.
Then Craig, I just, like, judo a knee just blew up.
That was the judo era, Craig, wasn't it?
Stretched it all out.
11, you were judo, you were a judokai, weren't you? Or judoka at 11.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. So you went chubby for long. Then you just became long.
Yeah. I was too tall for judo, though. I used to get cut in half.
Yeah, I guess so, right? You can't use your reach. Wouldn't be as useful in judo as it would be in other martial arts, I wouldn't imagine.
Yeah, somewhat, but the smaller, stocky guys they can spin and just use their hips to take you out of the knees.
Brian Jacks.
Yeah. There's one guy in the lower mainland in Vancouver. I don't remember his name, but I beat him once, but I think I was like 1-10 maybe against him. Yeah. He was great.
But you beat him once.
Beat him once, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I lost one match to him. I don't think it lasted longer than 3 seconds.
Really?
Yeah. I just grabbed a hold of him, and I just remember seeing the roof and spinning and just wondering where the fuck I was, and then just bang, if on, the referee.
Yes.
It's over.
Ooh, and sounds like Craig's my lost sex life.
Yeah, and I remember getting up. I was all like, what just happened? And my gi was coming out of my belt. And
that's when you were chubby.
Yeah.
Sounds like my sex life with a chubby.
Before you bow to each other, the referee's like, you got to tuck yourself and make yourself look respectable, right?
Also, I'm a sex slave.
Yeah. What's all the grease on the mat? Oh, that's my gi.
Yeah,
that's his goo. We're like,
that's my clarified butter.
Good times, good times, you know?
Good times.
Craig was peaking as a judoka. What can I say? A judoka. Is it judoka, right? Not a judokai. Judoka.
Yeah.
That's made up. Yeah.
Okay. Whatever. Anyway, it's Footy Prime. It's just four of us today, but we have a guest coming up in a few minutes' time. James Johnson from Canada's Hooker Business. For the first time, actually, on this show. So we'll delve into all things Canadian soccer business, the commercial side of the game. Big year coming up, obviously. And he's been on the job now for about 6 months, I think. So we'll find out what he's figured out, if anything, about the wonderful thing that is Canadian soccer and the zeitgeist therein.
That's right. How long do you think it's going to take before you start to call him JJ?
Already.
I know.
When I talked to Laura, when I talked to Laura at Canada Soccer Business, I refer to James Johnson as JJ in my texts. It's just easier. It's quicker.
Sure.
You know, double J, yeah. Maybe.
All his close friends call him J squared.
Yeah, J squared. Let's ask him, shall we? Yeah. Let's start off on the right foot. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's Dubs and it's Craig Forrest. Yeah, and it's JC and I'm Shams. No Wong and no Jimmy today. We had a great show yesterday. You heard most of it, I'm sure. I watched most of it. We had to cut a chunk out about Canadian Player of the Years when we gave our personal votes for the top three because we weren't supposed to do that, apparently.
Okay. Let's be transparent. No, you can't do that.
Yeah, we may as well. Canada Soccer were very cool about it. They said, hey, guys, if you read the actual email, it did say, please don't do exactly what you just did.
That's right. Don't do that. Your podcast was a red circle with a line through it.
We're such idiots. Like one of us could have read that, right? There's six of us. One person it takes to read it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we will drop that tomorrow when we're allowed to, when they've announced the top three. Okay? So our apologies to Canada Soccer, who've been very good to us this past year.
Yeah. They don't want us to influence other people, I guess.
That's right.
Yeah, because we're so influential.
Everyone's heard this open.
Jesus, what? Six idiots. Anyway, they announced, though, today the young player of the year. Do you see that?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Olivier Chisholm and Luc de Vigerolle named the Canada Soccer's 2025 Young Players of the Year. Olivier, of course, broke through with AFC Toronto this past season, Dubs. Big name for the future, fair to say?
Yes, huge name for the future. Billy Wilson, Marco Milanovic for AFC Toronto have spoken very, very highly of her, and she had a great campaign with the U20 national team, which did very well. And then she had a few games professionally. So, like, that's what you want, this next generation that's getting a taste of a domestic pro league. You want them to be in that pro environment day in, day out. Like, if she's going to go to school, tremendous. Mm-hmm. Like, if she can stay and she can have a couple of games under her belt and just be in that training environment, that's going to raise the collective level. If that is the standard that we're setting for the average 20-year-old who's in the national team system. Mm-hmm.
Bodes very well. And obviously, Luc de Vigerolle made a name for himself this past summer, filling in through injury at first for Moise Bembido, Derek Cornelius for Canada, and looked really good. So that centre-back depth is looking pretty impressive for Canada moving forward.
And he came on the podcast.
He did. One of our favourite guests, actually. In fact, we're going to have a little show at some point before the new year, right? Yeah. And we're going to look at some of our favourite guests over the past year and hand out some awards. So no pressure on our next guest. None whatsoever. You've got to be better than Promise David. I think right now Promise is the guy that probably holds the torch for being our favourite guest so far. But we'll find out. James Johnson is CEO of Canada Soccer Business, making his debut on Footy Prime. James, welcome to the show, mate.
Thanks, James. It's great to be here with you and our colleagues.
Yeah, awesome to have you.
We're just discussing, like, your friends call you JJ, Double J, J Square. Oh.
Well, my name actually when I was playing, when I was younger, was Jamie. And my real name is James. And then when I worked in sports business, it became JJ. So you can call me James, you can call me Jamie, you can call me JJ. I'll respond to anything, but most people call me JJ.
You know, I feel underdressed as well.
I was called Jamie up until I was 10 years old as well.
There you go.
I moved schools. And my actual name is Andrew James Sharman, right? Uh-huh. And I moved schools and at, I think, 10 years of age. And we underlined James, but they didn't realize that, called me Andrew. I was too shy to correct them, so I was called Andrew for a couple of years. Okay. So, you know, explains a lot.
It's too much information for JJ.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, this is pretty prime for you. In at the deep end, eh? So, James, we actually met a few months ago as a media roundtable when you first took the job. And actually, you asked most of the questions, which is quite refreshing, as you're trying to figure out the lay of the land in Canadian soccer circles.
Yeah.
You figured it out now? Does it all make sense to you?
I think it's important to ask questions, particularly when you're the new kid on the block. I think good leadership is really, it's about understanding challenges before you're proposing solutions. So that roundtable was important. It was important for me to ask questions and not come in with assumptions. And, you know, that was really what I focused on in the first 3 to 4 months. It was speaking to different people within the industry, both in Canada and also abroad, and trying to really find patterns around challenges. And I call it a discovery phase. You know, and we're sort of approaching the 6 month mark now, and you know, we're in that transition from discovery into, you know, how do we set ourselves up to be in a great position going forward in 2026. How do we set ourselves up organizationally, but also how do we contribute to a broader ecosystem with a lot of people doing a lot of great things to make 2026 such a great year for the sport?
Did you find or have you found that there's a similarity between Australia and Canada in many ways and the synergies?
You know what, Craig? Yes, there are so many similarities. You know, like Canada, Australia has is the biggest participant. Australian soccer is the biggest participant sport in the country. The A-League and the W-League are, you know, they're a little bit older than obviously the CPL and the NSL, but not that much older. You know, we're talking 10, 15 years older, and so they're still quite new. The national teams, though, are similar. You know, I think the great news for Canada is, you know, the women's team has been so strong for so many years, and the men's team now is a great team. And, you know, I don't think Australia's there yet, to be candid. I think Australia's done very well given the teams they've had over the past, you know, 6 to 8 years. But I think that's actually an opportunity for Canada that Australia doesn't have, because you've got teams that can literally go into tournaments now and win. And I think that is important. And when you've got two great national teams that are, you know, in the forefront and they've broken into mainstream, which I hope we can contribute to doing over 26 and 27, I think that's really where the sport comes together and really helps the whole sport grow, including participation.
I had a chance, sorry guys, before you guys jump in, but I had a chance to speak a lot with Mark Schwarzer, a great Australian servant for the national team down in DC for the draw. And he was talking that he thought there were some similarities between Canada and Australia as far as the powers to be, and that although Australia is football's number one in participation, it gets suppressed somewhat because of the people and the powers that push Australian rules football, for example, rugby, and it's difficult to get ahead there. And he thinks that maybe it was is similar here with hockey. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think I do. And look, I know Schwartzy very well, and I'm sure you guys probably played against each other, Craig.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, 93. Yeah,
93. Okay. Yeah. look, I think that is a fair assessment by Schwartzy, and I've had many conversations with him over the years. I always felt, and I'm putting my former job hat on at the moment, and then I'll come back to Canada. I always felt that, you know, you've got to play to your strengths. And in the Australian landscape, you've got sports like in Canada, like the AFL, like the NRL, that are, they're a top tier men's professional league, and people follow them week in, week out, and it's very engaging. What I always felt the opportunity was with Australia was that, you know, Football Australia could really help lift the level and the brand of the women's national team, which was unique. And that happened over the past, you know, sort of 5-6 years and through the Women's World Cup, and really start getting a cross-pollination of fans that were supporting historically the men's national team and also the women's national team. And Australian football really grew. It grew quickly because, you know, when you're able to have two great teams that are playing, you know, 2-3 matches every sort of 6 to 8 weeks, you get double the content, and you can create engagement that continues and continues and continues. And when you can overlay that with good performances on the pitch, particularly when teams are playing on home soil, it can really elevate the sport against other sports. And I really see that opportunity here. You know, like, as I said, great women's team that will play in 27 in Brazil in the same time zone, right? That's a huge opportunity. Mm-hmm. Netflix has now taken the broadcast rights. You know, we own the rights. Until then, how do we create a win-win so we can help boost the women's national team visibility? And then obviously next year we've got the Men's World Cup. And this is going to be something that, you know, Planet FIFA comes to Canada. We've never hosted a men's senior World Cup. We've hosted obviously a women's senior World Cup, but that's just going to lift the level. And if we can be prepared collectively to make sure that we provide a platform for the players in 26 and then 27, I think it's going to be great. And I think we'll be competitive against other sports.
That Australian comparison is interesting. It does seem that over the years, though, Australia's been backed by the government more so than perhaps Canada. Is that a challenge for us here still, that we have to rely perhaps in the private sector more so than other countries?
Look, I'm still learning the ropes on that, question, James. But I would say this. I think that I am a little bit concerned at the pace that the legacy conversations are happening here. I want to be really honest about that. You know, we still have 6 months, and that's great. But I think what we'll see is as we get closer to the World Cup, we have the March windows, and then the kickoff for the World Cup. I think the expectation, not of just the government and the football community, but the community in general, will really be, well, that's great. We've got this huge event that we're all enjoying, but what is a legacy, right? And I think we need to be collectively ready to have that conversation and have an ask for government, because there's going to be a lot of pressure for government to deliver for football and for soccer, of course, in the country. In the Australian experience, the government support, it's a new thing. Like, if we were having this conversation 8 or 9 years ago, the government support for soccer was very small. I think that the key change was the ability of the Australian Federation to start talking the language of government and really trying to find ways to understand the policy of the government, what was important for the government and the community, and being able to tailor the asks to help support the objectives of the government. And I think that's really important with government engagement. And it's something that, I think if we're going to be successful here, I'd really like to see as we lead into the Men's World Cup next year.
Is part of that discussion and kind of capturing the audience that we'll see for the World Cup next year and engaging the government, engaging the community from the grassroots where you've mentioned, whether it's Australia or here, it's the most registered sport in Canada, over 1 million kids play. So it's not only seizing that momentum that will happen at the World Cup, but then also the engagement of the municipalities, of the federal government in the way of infrastructure. So the NSL just got a really big boost injection of funds from the government that's earmarked for just that, over $5 million. Is that part of your long-term strategy at the helm of CSB and CPL to create that legacy there where you have soccer-specific builds in Canada?
Yes is the short answer, but there's a caveat to it, right? I think the success, and by the way, I thought that was awesome for the NSL. What an achievement, after just a year of playing. And I think that was a really strong message from the government, like, full applause to the NSL. That was awesome. I think the way for us to do it is to go collectively as a sport to the government. And, there's a lot of alignment that we can get. And I know Canada Soccer is working together with the NSL, with us, and also with FIFA Canada. And that's a great start, because I think from a government perspective, if you've got all these different asks coming in, you don't want to be making choices and, standing on landmines, et cetera. I think what's needed is just a collective voice, a well-coordinated, realistic ask. Grants and funding for soccer specific stadium for the NSL, that is equally important for the CPL. The chances are we're going to be wanting to play in the same markets, and what we want are great stadiums so that our fans, whether they're watching the women's game or the men's game, have great experiences. And that's going to be a legacy of the World Cup. So I think the coordination, which is starting, and the alignment is going to be really important in unlocking government funding, particularly for infrastructure, as you mentioned, Amy.
The issue in the past has been the collective. There hasn't been a collective. There's been too many dissenting voices, too many personal agendas, egos over the generations of the game in this country. How would you say the relationship between CSB and Canada Soccer right now is?
Look, if I listed out the top, two or three priorities as the incoming CEO, the relationship with Canada Soccer has been my number one priority. And there's logic to that. I know there's a lot of history, and that history needs to remain history, and we need to draw a line and move forward. And that means we need a new agreement, and we've been working on that, and we're in a great spot. We're not there yet, but we're not too far off. But if I park the agreement for a moment, you can write anything you want down on a piece of paper. What's important is the spirit of the agreement and the culture around the agreement. And a big focus of mine, and it has been reciprocated by Canada Soccer and Kevin during the period I've been here, has really been to build a trusting relationship where we can work and see ourselves as partners. I don't think, and you can correct me, I don't think there's been any negativity. There's been no negative media comments over the past, you know, 6 or so months. Everything that's come out of our offices or Canada Soccer has been positive, and that's reflective from what's going on the ground. You know, I speak to Kevin Daly. You know, we're working through, you know, different challenges. We're trying to support Canada Soccer as much as we can, and that's being reciprocated. And I think that will set ourselves up culturally once we knock the new agreement together, which we're close to doing.
I must say the negativity was really great for content on our part. So it's been a little bit bland the last few months. So we need to work on that. Is it though, do you think it's important that an agreement is in place before the World Cup? Is that your goal?
It will definitely be in place before the World Cup. Without doubt. You know, I'm hoping it's much earlier than the World Cup. But of course, we've got to get comfortable with the sort of final bits and pieces of the agreement. But, you know, let's imagine for a moment that we're going into 26 and we're in early 26 and we have a new agreement. You know, Canada Soccer then has the respective CBA agreements with the players, and we're working together with a government ask ahead of a men's World Cup, which is going to be amazing. It's going to change the face of the sport. But also, you know, 12 months later, we have a Women's World Cup in Brazil. Like, it's just this golden window at the moment. And I think it's important for all stakeholders. And we're doing our piece to make sure that we're ready to go as early as possible in 2026.
I know when we first spoke a few months ago now, you mentioned media, how important, you know, you think it is telling the story of the game in this country. Obviously, that's being going on. It's a very long process, the Rogers situation. Where are we at with regard One Soccer and getting a linear license progress?
So, look, we're waiting for the or One Soccer, I should say, is waiting for a mediation, so to speak, through the CRTC. And look, I'm the kind of person that's going to happen when that happens, and I'm hoping that happens very, very shortly. But, you know, in the meantime, we've got to move forward, right? And I think we just have to be pragmatic. Our focus has been to increase our level of content offer, and that's why we recently acquired the Bundesliga rights. There was a logic behind that. It wasn't just so that the Canadian fans could watch Bundesliga soccer. Of course, our captain is playing and was coming back. And the logic is the fans can watch Alphonso week in, week out as he re-enters the pitch for Bayern Munich. And we're going to do a lot of shoulder programming around that because it's a pretty cool concept if you can follow the captain of the men's national team leading into a home-hosted World Cup. So we're also focused on other content at the moment. We're looking at leagues, women and men, in different parts of the world where we can acquire rights and really bring them together so that we make it a little bit easier for the football fan, for the soccer fan, so that they can go to one place to watch soccer. It's a lot of work because there's a lot of great content out of there, but our focus, our priority is really focusing on leagues, men and women, where Canadian national teams are playing. And that's something that I think you're going to see more of as we get into the early parts of 2026, where you'll see more acquisitions for One Soccer, for CSB, I should say, to put on One Soccer to make our content readily available for the fans.
Well, James, we lost, suspended Valor. And that word suspended operations, does that mean there's a potential suitor down the road for the Winnipeg outfit?
Look, I think sometimes, Craig, you got to take one step back to go two steps forward. I felt with Winnipeg that we needed some time to get set up better, to be candid. We needed a new ownership group in Winnipeg, and we also needed a stadium solution because the stadium that Valor was playing at, it wasn't soccer specific and wasn't right for the stage that Valor were at in terms of its growth. I went out there and I went out there to listen. I was open-minded about the decision. You know, I spoke with the community. I spoke with the fans. I spoke with the ownership group. I went to the stadium. So I really tried to get as best understanding as I could based on the facts that were in front of me. And, you know, I drew the conclusion that I thought it was the right time to pull the plug, but for the short term. And I really want to be clear on that because it's a great market. Like it's the people love soccer in this community. It's absolutely clear. There's high participation, but what we need to go back there is a new ownership group, and we need a stadium solution. And I hope that we can work with the NSL over time to find a solution, because I know that's a market that the NSL would like to be in as well. And I think that's where a good strategic collaboration can occur.
That was a strange couple of weeks, wasn't it? Supra's announced great news, everything's looking good, and then of course the bad news hits. Listen, you're a smart guy. You've been around the block in the football world. You wouldn't just jump at any job. You must have asked a lot of people about this country and about the potential for the game in this country. And we always hear the positive stuff, the good stuff. You know, we see both sides of it as well. What was the reason that really allured the fact that you towards this burgeoning soccer market that I think is probably still in its infancy?
Look, I think the way to answer that is I was the CEO of Football Australia for 5.5 years. Before that, I worked at FIFA for many years, where my job was essentially to grow professional football in many countries around the world. I am really passionate about football being number one around the world. And the reality right now is we are number one in most countries, but we're not number one in the big countries, right? And I consider Canada obviously a big country. It's a top 10 economy of the world. I'm really excited, and I believe in the opportunity, and I believe in what's going to be ahead for Canadian soccer. And I'll explain my logic. In countries where you have high participation, it means that the next generation love the sport. They're playing it week in, week out. That's happening here. In countries where leagues are developing at the professional level that can develop players for the senior national teams, we've got great leagues that are at the start of their journey in the CPL and the NSL. And then we have the League Ones that sit under that are developing, you know, the talent. Like a lot of the women's national teams and the men's national teams have come on out of League One. Like that's really exciting. And then two great national teams, like men and women, that is unique. You know, a lot of teams, if you're Argentina, you might have a great men's team, but the women's team is not as good. Here, you have two world-class national teams. And I think being able to bring that together at a time where we will host, you know, the world's biggest sporting event, it really provides a platform for really quick growth. And I would love to be part of that. And I also want to contribute to that. And I think Canada deserves to be in a position in world football where it is a top nation. I think the opportunity is there. That's why I'm here.
Do you really believe that soccer can be mainstream in Canada?
Absolutely, Amy. I wouldn't be here if I didn't. And rest assured, I wake up every morning as a British Australian wanting to ensure that Canadian soccer is mainstream. And I'm working very hard to do that with the team here.
Are you watching the Ashes? And where's your allegiance?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right, yes,
I had to get that one in there.
I'm not watching it, but I'm keeping up to speed, particularly because of the results. But I'll stop there.
Fair enough. It's bloody hard to watch, though, isn't it? Even it's over there, man. Are you heading back to Australia for Christmas?
I was going to. I'm not. So I'm going to stay in Toronto, enjoy a white Christmas with family, and also just try to get a few things done. I want to make sure we're ready to hit the ground in 2026. That's a commitment that I've made to my organization. And I feel if I fly 24 hours and I'm sitting on a beach and having barbecues in Sydney, I might disconnect, which it's not the right time.
No kidding.
You can enjoy your first white Christmas, and then after that, yeah, it gets very boring very quickly, trust me.
Yeah, that's right.
James, thank you so much for this. Listen, we'll get back on the show at some point for sure. Really enjoyed it, and we look forward to what should be a really exciting 2026 and hopefully an agreement, because I'm sick and tired of asking people in suits about agreements between Canada Soccer and the CSB. It's all getting a bit boring for us, so I'm really looking forward to the moment we can get you on the show and talk about a deal being signed.
All right, deal. We'll get done.
Awesome.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Have a great day. Great to join you all. Take care.
Thanks.
That is James Johnson, CEO of Canada Soccer Business. Yeah, fascinating, right? I think we're in we've had, how many CEOs have there been now of CSB? There was David Clanahan. There was, of course, Martin Noonan more recently.
Right.
Who was also the commissioner, had, right?
Yeah, Bill Byrne, the initial commissioner as well. You know, it does say that, you know, James has been around, like I said, he's been around the block. He's been around through FIFA at the club level as well. CEO of Australia as well. That's a massive part. I think we're in pretty good shape. It seems that way. Are you optimistic hearing what he says, Dubs?
Yeah, I think I am. I think he's kind of relatively early in his tenure. I don't mean to say that it hasn't had time to be jaded yet. I don't think that's going to set in. I think he's got a pretty sensible approach to the whole thing, but I think also lofty goals in where he thinks Canada can be and where soccer can be situated in terms of that pecking order and how fans and the population consume the sport, right? Because I think there's a lot that you can still be shaped and steered, because we are nascent as a footballing nation, if we do consider ourselves one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting situation, and it's not an easy job he's got, as we know. But yeah, optimistic is a good word, I would say, to use. And I think we're in pretty good hands at the moment. I'll give these guys every opportunity to be successful. I like them.
Where are we at right now? Are we in our infancy? Are we prepubescent? Are we in our juvenile stage?
I think we're an 11-year-old Craig Forrest trying to fasten his gi.
Yeah, getting cut in half.
That's really, I haven't quite figured himself out just yet.
Yeah, maybe haven't sprouted. But right. We're on our way, yeah.
But you see some real athletic potential there.
Mm-hmm.
This guy could be a great martial artist or a soccer player.
Yeah. I was going to ask him if he's at home and whether, you know, because, you know when it works, like, you got shorts on underneath, boxers, and you throw your tie on your suit, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. As soon as you get off, you're half naked.
Put a pair of boy shorts on underneath.
Yeah. It didn't sound like I thought he was boring, right? When I said that I'm sick and tired of speaking to guys in suits about agreements because it's boring. Yeah. I hope I wasn't offensive there. I didn't mean to be.
No.
Yeah.
The point is, we as a podcast have asked so many people from Canada soccer side of things to the CSB side of things about this bloody agreement, right? And they all say the right things. They all say, yeah, we have a good conversation. We're close. Now, I've heard that for a year. Mm-hmm. Right. But the fact that he says it will be done by the World Cup, that's optimistic.
Yeah, and you mentioned it off the top. You talked about the fact that there hasn't been very much negativity, which is good for our content. But ultimately, as a soccer fan, and then what we hope is the best for our national teams and really leveraging broadcast and media rights, you want that to get sorted, right? And we haven't heard a whole lot. And I would tend to think, again, as Forrest pointed out, that we're optimistic. And I think that that is glass half full as well, that we haven't heard murmuring, we haven't heard mudslinging, and there hasn't been anything kind of untoward, and I think that's good. And maybe that's naive, but I think it is.
No,
good.
You're right, 100%. I mean, to me, it tells me that they've put ego aside, because you get ego involved in these negotiations. That's when things get a little bit personal, and these digs start flying out from left, right, and center.
Yeah, I was going to ask, but I didn't want to kind of throw salt in the wound because you'd already asked about the CRTC. So I kind of just kept my mouth shut. But the fact that TSN and OneSoccer/CSB have a deal now where the men's national team games are co-broadcast, right? Like OneSoccer has the rights, or CSB does, and then they're being broadcast also at the same time on TSN in the advance of the World Cup or in the lead up to the World Cup. I wonder if there's still no, with the mediation doesn't happen, there's no solution. Does the same thing happen for visibility and a platform for our women's national team as the lead into the Women's World Cup in 2027? Because not even in a spirit of equity, but if we're just talking about equity, then the women need to have the same platform as the men.
100%. Now, Women's World Cup is on Netflix though, correct?
Correct.
Right, so it's not on TSN.
No, but I mean, you would hope that that same spirit of collaboration and leveraging a platform would be there, even if you have to shake hands with a streaming giant.
No, you're right. No, I agree. But I think with, specifically TSN, though, it's a question of they want to show these games because they have the World Cup. They're not doing it out of the goodness of their heart. They're not paying for any of this stuff. mm-hmm. or very little of it, right? Mm. I wonder what happens post-World Cup when Netflix takes over the women's side of things. That's a conversation for a long podcast. Yeah, you know, we've had it before, and it triggers Craig. So I don't know if we should get into that right now. Yeah. I understand why. But that's a valid point, though.
Yeah, it's just something that's been nagging at me, right? Like, I'm doing the coverage for One Soccer and talking about our women's national team as they play these friendlies. And then next year, World Cup qualifying, and then a World Cup year the following year. They need to have the same visibility as our men has gotten and our men's team has received. And I know that it's a little bit tricky. You have to unravel all that stuff. It is not as straightforward as you're saying TSN rights holders, so it does make sense for them. But still, it, as the broadcast rights holder, you would hope that they would be upheld in the same way.
Yeah, I just hope that Canada Soccer has a better, or CSB has a bit more leverage post-World Cup regarding the rights to their product. Because right now they're just giving it away.
Yeah.
Right? And it's sad that they had to give it away and they can't make some money out of this. But getting their own linear channel is a huge step in that direction. Wherever that is on the dial. Right? Yep. Channel 436.
Yeah, it's a big step.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a really interesting chat. And enjoying his first Canadian Christmas. Remember my first Canadian Christmas? It snowed like a bugger. And we went for a family walk before lunch. And we got all these weird looks from inside all these other Canadian houses. And what are you idiots doing? We're like, hurry, we're new to the country.
Yeah, it is fun for the first couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, anything else you want to get to?
No, I don't think so.
You know what? I don't know if you saw. You saw the whole Messi to India tour? So just after the MLS Cup, Messi and Suarez and Rodrigo de Paul went on a sightseeing tour. It was obviously a commercial tour of India, all around India, promoting, well, themselves, let's be honest here, but just, you know, testing, I guess, the market, which is enormous, as our boy Ian Humes told us how mm-hmm. big it is. But things got out of hand. Check it out. I mean, the first event was nuts. It really was. They had the kid leave early after 20 minutes because there was a violence in the stands, seats being thrown, tens of thousands of people in the streets trying to catch a glimpse of him. It was crazy. I haven't read too much into it. Just wondering if you guys had. But it's really quite something.
Yeah, I saw a bit of it. And they were disappointed because he had only made a 15-minute appearance. And
yeah, but it was getting violent in the stands. People were freaking out. Tearing up the place. Oh, Suarez re-signed for a year, by the way.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Really?
No wonder, given his impact late in the season for Inter Miami. Maybe he's the Messi whisperer. And that's the reason. That's probably more likely, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Nice background, JC. It's very festive.
Festive, yeah.
Very festive.
Okay, well, listen, we've got more podcasts coming up between now and Christmas and the New Year's. Some fun ones. We've got some, like I mentioned, maybe our little award show at some point, quiz at some point as well. Mm-hmm. But yes, stay tuned. Tomorrow we will drop again, but properly and legitimately, our thoughts on who should be the finalists for the Canadian Players of the Year. And we hope not to upset anyone. Not that they were upset. Like I said, they were very cool about it. They just know how stupid we are. So until then, make sure you like and subscribe and follow us. And we'll see you probably tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter if we ever make one.
You know, if we do a Footy Prime award show, we should have the theme be a Syria highlight show. What you were talking about yesterday. Yeah, where we should all wear ball gowns.
Yes. I have a ball gown I've been waiting to wear for a long time.
Yes.
Is it bedraggled?
Strapless, I hope.
It's bedraggled. I'll be draggling myself, across the floor.
All right. That's it. Stop recording. Oh, I get it.
Wait, why won't it end?